photographer who spent his life walking city streets watching for the unstaged image of the city. Robert Walker shoots Times Square, Las Vegas, Montreal, Warsaw. At a time when the documentary photo was de rigueur black and white, Walker embraced color. Photographer Robert Walker grew up in East End, Montreal, within walking distance of the Vickers shipyards. But he spent most of his adult life walking the streets of some of the busiest downtowns of the world. Much of his work has been about capturing the pell-mell overlapping of realities found in cities. Walker is not so well known at home, but his photos have been in galleries around the world and published in magazines such as American Photographer, Aperture, and CV. Robert Walker, hello.
Hello.
Can you tell me, you grew up in Hochelaga-Maisonneuve. Was there art and culture in your life when you were a boy?
Well, that was really the late 40s, early 50s. I can't say there was culture. You know, my parents and my grandparents all worked in the huge factories that were there at that time. You know, it's Vickers, the Angus shops. But my father was very musically inclined. He played in the Royal Canadian Artillery Band, and he was a great fan of military music.
What did he play?
He played the euphonium, which was a kind of a soprano tuba, maybe you might call it. Yeah, it was really a band instrument. But he loved all kinds of music. He played the violin, the ukulele. And my first love actually was music. You know, I played the tenor saxophone before I got into the arts.
So. Jazz?
Jazz, yes. And I played in some of the very lowly clubs in the East End at that time.
For
the Café de l'Est, for what are called now exotic dancers.
Oh,
yeah. But
you
were
behind
pretty,
the scenes.
It was pretty tame stuff for that time, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So when did art come into your life?
I actually had a job at Canadian Vickers Shipyards, you know, a father to son kind of position. And I couldn't stand it. I hated every minute I was there and did everything I could to go back to university. So I applied at what was called Sir George Williams then. People will remember that. And I wanted to go into psychology because that was a very sort of trendy subject at the time. All the courses were filled, and there were art courses open, so I took that in lieu of nothing else. So that's really how I got into it. And I studied painting for 4 years.
So you basically signed up for art not having any pre-inclination?
Well, I was always interested, but I didn't think they had great career possibilities.
No, well, that
turned out to be true, yes.
So what was happening in painting at that time? What did you get into?
Well,
in painting?
It was very interesting because the style of the day was we didn't paint at all with brushes or charcoal. We painted with rollers and masking tape. And we were basically into geometric abstraction. And I took a great interest in the American pop artists at that time. So this is something that was very useful for me later in my photographic life.
So you were painting with rollers and masking tape. You said, what kind of colors were you using?
Well, I was always using pure primary colors, bright yellows, bright blues, bright reds. And they were just, you know, colors I felt I had an affinity with. And when I started photographing, I transposed that same palette to my photography. So they were it is my color palette, those bright,
strong colors.
Bright, strong colors, yeah.
Do you know what it is about that color palette that makes it yours?
No, I just think everybody has a personal color palette that they really don't discover because they never, you know, you have to work at it and find out, what it is. You can always tell a Gauguin just by his color palette or a Van Gogh. Everybody has that. It's inbred. You're born with it. It's a gift of God.
So when were you first exposed to photography?
Well, there was a period in the mid-70s where I was living in a loft in old Montreal, completely broke. And a good friend told me that there was a potential job available at a photography gallery, which I really just lived across the street from, what was at that time was called the Centaur Galleries of Photography. So I walked over there and there was a chap sitting there at a desk and I walked in and I asked him if there was a job available. He said there was, but he had promised the job to a friend who who happened to be in Europe at the time, but when he came back, if he didn't want the job, it was available to me. I paid $10,000 a year, which seemed like an absolute fortune in 1975 or whenever it was. But he said, I told him straight out that I really had no interest in photography, but since it was purely a clerical job, I feel that I'd be able to handle it okay. And so he says, well, with your kind of enthusiasm, I don't want to lose somebody like you, I'm going to offer you a chair scholarship. I said, really? A chair scholarship? I said, how much money is involved in that? He says, well, there's really no money. What you do is you set the chairs up for the Sunday afternoon lectures, and remuneration will be coffee and donuts after. So I took him up on the offer.
Accepted,
I accepted the offer, and it turned out to be one of the smartest things I did in my life, because the lecture series was absolutely phenomenal. He had the very best photographers in the world working at that time coming over to give these lectures. People like André Cortez. Yeah. Jacques-Henri Lartigue, who was a photographer from the turn of the century, came over at 85 years old, and Arnold Newman from the States, Dwayne Michaels, Ralph Gibson, a whole pantheon of superstars who, it was just like an incredible education to have over a two-year period, which culminated when he brought Lee Friedlander, the great master street photographer, to give a workshop over a few weekend periods, which I took really as a lark, not out of any interest, just because I, had nothing better to do. But I decided I would take it very seriously, and I did, and worked all week very hard, and presented the prints to him the following day and the following weekend, and he was very, very encouraging to me, and his work was so influential and phenomenal that. I really took a much more serious interest in photography.
Do you know what it was that you responded to? What it was that made photography become your thing?
He had such an intense personal vision of rendering the world in a very personal way that was so eye-opening compared to the very sort of pseudo-intellectual concerns of painting at that time, which seemed to be so self-referential and arcane.
Did he give you any advice?
He gave lots of advice, but the advice really seeps in later. It sort of goes over your head at the time. But the one thing that I did realize, I could never, ever come close to matching the genius of his work. And decided I would switch to, he only photographed in black and white, incidentally. So I decided I would switch to color right then and there. So after that workshop in, 1975, I never took another black and white picture. I just, worked... totally in color, and it was a very not many people were doing it at that time. Like I say, there were no models to emulate, so it was on the job training in a sense.
So Friedlander was really sort of the person who kick-started you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Was it his street photography, that element of it, that kind of documentary?
His street, the way he would structure things in a very, he had a very democratic way of composing. A shadow on the street would be just as important as, a beautiful woman on the, walking by. It was this total sort of unromantic, unsentimental vision that he had, very, very American compared to the sentimental photographers of like Cortez or Cartier-Bresson.
So what did you do with that?
I tried to take color, pictures in color like he photographed in black and white, but it didn't work because the color was too uncontrollable. So the whole trick was to learn how to control the color, which took me a few years to learn how to do that.
How did people look at your work and these attempts to make things work in color in photography?
People did not like color photography at that time. They found it crass and vulgar. They objected to it because before that time you couldn't make color prints. The color prints would fade away, and the inks were fugitive and the dyes. So people were not used to looking at it. So if you're not used to something, you immediately reject it.
But they feel like it was commercial. It was commercial advertising.
Not commercial. They just didn't. It was sort of snapshots. They compared it with their snapshots. It was a it was a strange thing. It took a while to catch on.
But how did you feel? Why did you continue working in
color? Oh, because I knew that they lacked perception. I just had to
they just
persist.
Had to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And what did persisting involve? Like, you had to work out the technology as well as the subject matter.
It wasn't much with technology. I just what I did to produce my color palette, I would only work during bright sunny days where, you know, I would get those bright blues and bright reds. And I work with also a very, very small aperture where everything is in perfect focus, the foregrounds, the backgrounds, and then I can create those kind of spatial ambiguities. And
a lot of your work has done in Times Square. What took you to New York, and what sort of impact did being in New York have on your signature style?
I was lucky enough to get a Canada Council grant in 78 and decided I would take the bull by the horns and move to New York because I just needed some more inspiration. So I moved down with that small grant, and that kept me going for, I don't know, 6 months. And then I had to find my own way, and I had no official papers. I had no green card. So I had to become a man of many caps to survive in New York 10 years, without a green card.
You mean like workers' caps, like hard hats?
Well, no, I had to be a man of many functions. Had to take advantage of many opportunities.
So what were some of those?
Well, there were a very dramatic example of it. It also shows the kind of dramatic variation that New York can offer. I was doing some real pick and shovel work with a group of Central Americans, really, who are also all illegal. It must have been 95 degrees. We're demolishing an office. We were sweating. I was covered in plaster and sweat. And just by chance, after that evening, I had a job photographing, I think it was the Royal Winnipeg Ballet uptown. So, I got home, had a shower, got into my polyester tuxedo, went uptown, find myself 2 hours later eating lobster with Baryshnikov in his elegant apartment. So those contrasts from one thing to another is things like that can only happen in New York. Another strange, funny situation is when I was working at the International Center of Photography, curating a show of the portrait photographer Philippe Halsman with Cornell Kappa. And at one point, the International Center of Photography was doing a huge photo festival in Venice, and the entire curatorial and administrative staff moved to Venice, leaving me in the museum. At that time, Jackie Kennedy was working at Doubleday doing books, and she was doing a photography book, and she wanted this exhibition to be shown at the museum, so she had to come in to chat with somebody about it. So the only person with any authority was me. So she had to come in and see me. But I had no authority. So and I was completely terrified, because I couldn't agree to anything. But I ended up just sort of agreeing with everything she said. I said, well, I'll let them worry about it when they get back. And so I was with her for half an hour. And I couldn't look her in the eye. It was because she was such an icon. I was terrified to look her in the eye. But I was afraid I would break down, start asking her about what it was like in Dallas on the fateful day. That was another one of those kind of New York stories. So
how did those stories, how did those experiences influence what you were taking pictures of or what your photographs looked like?
Well, they didn't really. They've just helped me, just paid the bills to help keep me out there. But, these jobs were always very sort of part-time, and I would spend, 3-4 days on the street doing my photography.
But yeah, I could tell you that your work is a study in contrast. Your work is people and the city,
right,
and all these, the advertising, the buses, the traffic, things coming together in your photographs like they did in your life. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. New York City keeps you in the here and now. Because of the intensity of it, if you're living somewhere else, you're reminiscing about the past or, you know, imagining the future. You know, you're never, you know, you're like an animal in the here and now all the time. And, you know, it keeps you very, aware of your surroundings. And I think that's good for street photography. You have to go into a kind of a zone to be, you know, wandering the streets in this sort of strange psychological state to, you know, have your antenna up and intuit where things are going to happen. And you lose it. It's like playing an instrument. If you don't do it every day, you lose your touch. You lose your lip like a trumpet player. You know, you got to keep at it.
When you were doing that, when you're working, what is it that you think that you're saying, telling, looking at?
Well, it's interesting that I work in Times Square because Times Square is it's a kind of a symbol for the horror of proliferation of imagery and it's a real challenge to try and impose some kind of order on this extremely chaotic situation and compose the structural elements of color, shape, and form, and then the movement of people, try and structure that as a kind of a ballet or a still from a film where everything seems to be in perfect harmony for that millisecond. And for that one instance, life makes sense. Life has meaning. There's structure to the world for that millisecond. And then it breaks down into chaos again. So, you know, if I can make many of these sort of milliseconds of where there's this perfect order to the world, it gives you a kind of a solace that life has meaning, but it's illusionary.
How does that relate to the fact that you've been taking pictures of at the Botanical Gardens for the last 3 years?
Well, I think that I got overloaded with urban centers. I've also photographed in Warsaw and Toronto and Rio de Janeiro. And I just needed a change. And I've never had any affinity with nature at all. I like the idea of going to the country. But when I get out there, I want to get back to the city after 2 hours. I can't stand it. So I felt that I really have to face the beast and start dealing with nature. So since I live close to the botanical gardens, I decided I would teach myself how to photograph flowers. And I went every day for 3 years and photographed flowers. It seems, you know, a simple thing to do. It's the ultimate cliché. But the flowers, they try to seduce you into taking their picture. But if you allow this, you end up with a Hallmark greeting card of sentimentality and romanticism. And so I took the same attitude with the flowers as when I'm in Times Square. I completely forget the flowers themselves and think abstractly. Think of some abstract paintings come to mind just in terms of pure shape, pure color, pure form.
That's quite a strange change if you think about it, from the urban to
that's
the pastoral.
Right. That's right. But it was very good for me. Yeah.
How so?
Well, it's funny, you know. I would be in the gardens at 8 o'clock in the morning when the flowers are filled, petals are filled with dew and they're colors. And it's absolutely phenomenal to do, once you have to actually concentrate so much on the flowers, you realize no painting or could ever come close. No man-made object can ever come close to the actual, beauty of the flowers. They're just, so it's, I'm seeing them for the first time. And, I would never look at them hadn't I been photographing them so intensely. So just personally, it's been a revelation.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Montreal photographer Robert Walker, he has a book, Color is Power, published by Thames and Hudson.